Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTWO News in Juneau here on Monday, the 25th of June, the year 2012. You're on a Juneau afternoon. Today, the guests are Alicia Jones, who will be talking about the City Museum's history grant. MJ Grande will be here with information about the library's participation in the 4th of July parade. Corey Pavitt will be here to talk about their workshop on Thursday night. We'll talk with Ken Fix about tomorrow night's retro science fi fiction movie, Robinson Crusoe on Mars. At Red is Almanac Burden on Music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for the rest of today, rain, high temperatures around 57 degrees. Forecast for tonight, more rain with low temperatures around 49 degrees. Tuesday looks like rain with high temperatures around 54 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Today, we are starting a week-long series on health and wellness in Indian country. The White House recently celebrated 1 year of the First Lady's Let's Move in Indian Country initiative by hosting a panel of leaders to talk about progress of the initiative, which focuses on American Indian and Alaska Native youth. One of the speakers was Leatrice Lewis with the Zuni Youth Enrichment Program and co-founder of the Zuni Wellness Center in New Mexico. She says there are challenges facing communities in need of health, wellness, and recreation programs, but suggests looking to community members for help.
Utilize the human resources, whether they come from the outside, whether right there in the communities. I cannot say enough of our volunteers who come to help us out in many of the activities. So volunteers are certainly very important. We're also related in our clan-wise. So anytime we have special events, it's all the aunties and the uncles that are standing in the back that have supported us to be successful. But one of the things that back 26 years ago, if I can remember, it just took a small group of people to really devote themselves to this message of healthy lives, you know, for our Indian communities, to be fit for life.
Lewis says addressing the needs of youth makes for healthy communities. The Let's Move in Indian Country initiative includes increasing opportunities for physical activity. There are also efforts across the country to address mental and behavioral health of Native people. Brenda Kennard is a Behavior Health Service Coordinator for the Gerald L. Ignace Indian Health Center. The center in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, helps Native people in the area and those from surrounding reservations. Kennard says one of the things they're focusing on is spirituality, language, and culture to help address issues facing tribal communities, including substance abuse and gangs.
I think when you build up someone's spirit and you have to give them, help them understand how worthy they are, and knowing that they have a strong support system, be it in their family or in the community, that this is where they will turn. And by offering programs, after school beating, we have some shawl club, we have some programs that we are starting up that will take them off the streets, make them less vulnerable to drugs and alcohol, gang life, help give them a sense of who they are and help them find out all those different aspects to who they are. Spiritually, mentally, physically, that's what's going to make them strong.
Kennard says revitalizing language, culture, and bringing back ceremonies are ways to help bring balance to Native lives. Kennard focused on wellness in Indian country recently at a training in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. The U.S. Department of Labor recently announced grants to help Native Americans impacted by fishing industry layoffs in Washington state. More than $2 million will provide employment-related services to members of the Lummi Nation affected by layoffs. The funds will help with services for 443 workers. The services include literacy education, basic skills training, career counseling, resume writing, and on-the-job training. The Labor Department first awarded the tribe with such funds in 2010. During this week in 1876, the Battle of the Little Bighorn took place in Montana. On June 25th and 26th, more than 200 soldiers, including Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer, died fighting more than 1,000 Lakota, Cheyenne, and Arapaho warriors. Today, the area is a national monument and includes an Indian memorial, which was established in memory of tribes defending their way of life during the battle. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
I'm Billy Mills. As a grandfather and Olympic athlete, I know the importance of keeping kids healthy. The Children's Health Insurance Program in your state can provide your child additional health coverage, such as dental care, vision care, and emergency services. Enrolling your child can also help maximize health resources at your travel clinic. To learn more, contact your clinic or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW or visit insurekidsnow.gov.
Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Jeff Brown with you, returning after a couple of weeks down south, where the sun actually shone for about 2 weeks in California. Thanks to Mark Katie Bosler, Andy Klein, Cheryl Levitt, Amanda Compton, and Ron and Pam Moore for filling in for me while I was gone. Studio now is Alicia Jones here to talk about the Juneau Douglas City Museum's City History Grant Program. Alicia, thank you for coming down to the station.
Thank you for having me.
This is a grant program that's developed to get people to write about history, or present
yeah.
history.
It's basically anyone who's interested in research, writing, photographing, or in any way documenting, preserving, or improving access to the history of the greater Juneau area. This grant is an opportunity to, it gives them a little bit of money to help them with that project.
How long has it been going on?
It was actually started by the Juneau Centennial Committee in 1980, and then the museum took over managing the grant. And in the early 1992, they awarded their first grant, and we've been awarding the Juneau History Grant each year since then.
But how many grants have you given out?
Ooh.
Or is there an average number of grants that you give out per year?
It varies. Some years we'll have one or two. We've had up to, I think, four is the most we've ever given out in 1 year. But it really depends on, you know, the applications and the projects. And each proposal can request up to $1,000 for a project. And so there's a committee that looks and evaluates the projects and then decides which ones to award.
What kind of rules of thumb do they use for guidance?
There's different criteria. They look at the historical value of the project, also looking at new themes. So if it's something that hasn't been done before, they really value that. Also looking at, we request a timeline and a budget and kind of the feasibility of those. And then also historic objectivity and looking at, you know, have they done initial research? You know, have they kind of started and really thought about this proposal, or is it a very, you know, introductory, like, I'm going to do this, but I'm not going to do any work until the money shows up. So we like to see, you know, that they've really thought about the project and maybe started working on it or done those preliminary steps.
All right. And the deadline is this Friday?
Yes. It must be postmarked by June 29th, or people can also hand deliver it to the museum.
And another question on the tip of my tongue, completely educated me.
Well, I would be happy to talk about some of the past projects.
That'd be great.
We've had kind of a variety. A lot of times they're publications, but they're also something that can grow into a potential coffee and collections, our monthly lecture series. They can present that or have a book signing. The basketball history, which we talked about last time I was on, that actually turned into a full-scale exhibit for the summer. We had one person, Ann Castle, put together Best Cook of the Week cookbook, and she had gone back and compiled all these recipes from the Juneau Independent column, Best Cook of the Week, and then went and interviewed these women that had been highlighted in that column. So it was kind of a women's history compilation, but also had recipes in it, which was great. And then we've had other projects, trail guides to the Treadwell Trail, a guide to the Last Chance Mining Museum, which included images and information about the mining tools up there. We've had projects like nonprofit organizations, the Juneau Douglas Little Theater requested funds for archival supplies to organize and preserve, you know, playbills and old photographs. And so that's a project that actually they're still working on, and we're hoping to have them come into the museum in the fall to do sort of a community help identify people that performed with the Juno Douglas Little Theater. So they're definitely, you know, it's a good opportunity, you know, if there's an area of history that you're interested in, and then just to kind of share it with the community and, you know, however that takes form, whether it's a presentation, a publication, a video, you know, we're open to ideas.
I remember my question.
Yes.
What kind of things are allowed in the budget?
Good question. We do not cover people's time, but things like printing costs, there is also things such as equipment that are possible, but you just need to kind of indicate, you know, the need for a particular type of equipment or program or things like that. But basically, the only thing that's not covered is contractual time.
Mm-hmm. The deadline is this Friday, and I'm looking for applications to be well thought out and realistically presented.
Yes.
All right. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask. Let's talk about this. What's going on this time of the year at the museum?
Sure. Right now, for the summer, we have two exhibits. We have Sidney Lawrence, Reflections of the Great Northwest. That will be up through November 17th. And we also have A Klondike Tale, A Juno Perspective, which is artwork by Avril Veliz, and that will be up through September 29th, and that's in our video room. And for people that are, you know, we have that program during the winter, free winter admission, so it's, you know, free to locals all year round, during the fall and winter because of community sponsors. And we do charge admission in the summertime, but we do offer annual passes for $20, and those are good for the pass holder and one guest for unlimited visits. So, you know, if people are not wanting to come to the museum, that's a great way. You know, if you come twice, basically, you've paid for that annual pass. So we definitely, you know, if you've got family coming in and you want to show them the Sidney Lawrence exhibit or check out Avril's exhibit, that's a great way to do it.
How many people do you have walking through the museum doors on an average year?
Oh, on average year, I would say between 17,000 and 20,000.
That's a good number of people learning about the capital city.
Yes.
Your hours?
We are open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, and we have been closed on the weekends, but starting July 7th, we will reopen on Saturday and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
All right, Alicia Jones from the Juno Douglas City Museum. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I guess if people have questions about the Juno History Grant or anything else going on at the museum, they should check out our website or they can give us a call. The main number at the museum is 586-3572.
And Alicia, thank you for coming down the station.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 25th of June, 2012. It's the birthday of George Orwell, born in London, 1903. Eric Blair was his name, most famous for his novels Animal Farm and 1984 in the late 40s. Both books published the last years of his life when he was very ill, had suffered personal tragedy. In late 1944, Orwell and his wife adopted an infant named Richard. 4 months later, she went in for a hysterectomy. She died under anesthesia. Orwell, devastated, tried to raise his infant son alone, hired a housekeeper, lived in a small, bleak apartment in London. He had written for the newspaper The Observer for several years. The publisher, David Astor, had a family estate on a remote Scottish island, Jura, and Astor offered to let Orwell stay there. So Orwell did. He had a cot, some pots and pans, not much more, lived on oatcakes and porridge and whatever he could catch hunting or fishing. It was a house without electricity, and the next winter was one of the coldest ever in Britain. He had a peat stove, used kerosene lamps, lived there with the baby. chain-smoking, writing his new novel called The Last Man in Europe. He was diagnosed with tuberculosis. His health deteriorated. His sister Avril moved in to cook meals and to help out. He refused to go to a doctor. By that winter, he was so sick, he was confined to his bed. He kept on writing. They put him on a new drug. He lost his hair. He got throat ulcers. In March of 1948, Orwell was in the hospital when his publisher sent him a letter, said he needed the book by the end of the year. So Orwell devoted himself to writing, though he could barely sit upright, finished the book by December, and changed the title from The Last Man in Europe to 1984. It came out in June of 1949 to rave reviews. Orwell was transferred to a hospital in London. He married a woman named Sonia Branwell, a young editorial assistant. He was planning a book about Joseph Conrad and a novella set in Burma. He believed that if he had a book left to write, that he would not die. And he died 2 months later, at the age of 46. Just before his death, he asked that his gravestone use his real name, not George Orwell. So that is what his gravestone reads. Here lies Eric Arthur Blair, 1903 to 1949. Here's a poem for today by Liesl Mueller, entitled Brendel Playing Schubert. We bring our hands together in applause, that absurd noise, when we want to be silent. We might as well be banging pots and pans. It is that jarring, a violation of the music we've listened to, without moving, almost holding our breath. The pianist in his blindingly white summer jacket bows and disappears and returns and bows again. We keep up the clatter, so cacophonous that it should signal revenge instead of the gratitude we feel for the 2 hours we've spent out of our bodies and away from our guardian selves in the nowhere where the enchanted live. A poem by Liesl Mueller, Brendel Playing Schubert, from her collection Alive Together, published by Louisiana State University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, helping professionals and businesses manage their reputations online, because search results can be the new first impression. Learn more at Reputation.com. And by Goddard College, offering low residency education for adult learners since 1963, now offering both bachelor's and master's degrees in Port Townsend and Seattle, Washington. Learn more at goddard.edu. Produced by Kathy Roach, written by Betsy Alistair. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Spend your summer dreaming big. Read.
Juneau Public Libraries is the place to go to find great material and fun activities. Ongoing programs include our story times plus crafts. Give us your reviews of the books you read and become eligible for great prizes.
First Tuesday family nights continue at the Valley Library.
Special events include marching in the Juneau 4th of July Parade and the encore performance of the Roustabout Circus.
See you at the library or visit the website at juneau.org/library for more information.
Time is 3:18, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. And speaking of the library, we have MJ Grandy from the library here to tell us about various things going on in the neck of the woods. MJ, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Hi, Jeff. It's great to be here with you. And that lead-in was perfect because I'm here to talk about the first Tuesday Family Night of July, which is coming up next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow. And we're going to be preparing for the 4th of July parade. This year, we're inviting many, many friends of the libraries to come march with us in the parade. So we're using our first Tuesday family night to make hats and gloves and all sorts of regalia elements. I hope I'm not misusing that word, but festive costume components. We have Alexander Gagne-Haas in town helping us. He's a theater technical specialist, a Juneau boy born and bred here, and he's come home for the summer, and he's helping to coordinate all of our embellishments. And then on Wednesday morning, the 4th of July, we have an parade entry, and we're inviting everybody to come out with March with us. You can bring the elements that you created the night before. We have some of our costume stash that people can borrow for the day and march in the parade. You'd probably recognize many of them. We've got Froggy and Toad and dragons and just sort of elements to wear. And then we've got lots of librarians that are coming along carrying book carts, and we hope everybody will proudly wear that you're a friend of the Juno Libraries buttons.
Busy time of year for the library?
Busy time of year. It's summertime. We're really so fortunate because the kids go away to school during the school year. We have such a good early childhood program, and we get attached to all these kids, and in the summertime they come back. So we've got lots of kids that are reading and earning free books for every 10 books they read, and we're getting a good supply of reviews where the kids tell us what they think about the books. We're great on the little kids, but we've got some fine prizes from some of the many of the merchants in town. But we need some of those bigger kids, the ones that can go on a helicopter or a zip line or might enjoy something from down in Trove. So we're really encouraging those kind of preteens and teenagers to let us know what they're reading and what they think about their books, too. The downtown library, if you've been there, you know that we are a hot spot, Wi-Fi spot for many, many visitors that come on the cruise ships. And they're really appreciating our beautiful facility and the services that we can offer and share to the public. One of the things about the library is you walk in the door, you're free to use our services. So we're doing our goodwill part for our summer visitors as well.
And how many patrons come there on a normal day?
Oh, I have no idea.
Internet pretty well used up?
Say that again?
Is the internet pretty well used up?
Yes. Everybody gets a very, very small piece of our bandwidth. You have to be good about sharing and very, very patient. But we do have free Wi-Fi, and so it's a good place to go to find it.
Tell me a little bit more about the family night.
Family nights, we've been going for, I think this might be our fourth year that we've been doing during the school year. We do it in conjunction with the Association for the Education of Young Children, AEYC, and during the summertime we do it on our own out at the Valley Library. Last month we had the Stevens Puppets came and put on an amazing show of the Wizard of Oz. We had over 200 people squished into the children's area. They were fantastic. Everybody should mark their calendars because they love their Alaska tour, and I think they're going to come back next year. They were talking about bringing Aladdin. Next month we have, the theme this summer is Dream Big, Read, and so in honor of a nighttime theme, we're going to be hearing about bats from, I apologize, but I forget the woman from Fish and Game who's going to come be our bat specialist and help talk about bats.
Tell me a little bit more about the summer reading program. How does that work? Do people get free prizes?
You sign in, you read books, 10 books, tell us the titles of the books and the authors, and then you come in, turn that in, and we've got a great supply of books that we've accumulated from Hearthside and Scholastic Books, and you just get to pick a book that you want to keep forever of your very own.
All right, and if people want to take advantage of marching along in the parade during the 4th of July, how can they do that?
If they want to call Jenna, J-E-N-N-A-G, Jenna Gunther at the Juno Public Library, or actually just call 586-5249. That's our main line, and they can send you off to who you need to know.
And MJ Grandy, thank you for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, just that you're going to be in the parade with us, and we're really, really happy to hear that.
It's an honor and a joy.
Indeed. Thanks, Jeff.
The drummer keeps the rhythm so that we can march along. The shakers and the cymbals add more percussion to the song. Rap-a-pa-pum, 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 rap-a-pa-pum. It's time to get together for lots of fun. Join the parade, join the parade. Join the parade, join the parade. You can hear the trumpets blare, the slide of a trombone, a clarinet, a piccolo, and the saxophone. Tweedledee-dum,
parade, join the parade. Bring your friends and family, tell everyone, join the parade, join the parade. Join the parade, bring your friends and family, tell everyone, join the parade, the color guard are passing, waving flags as they go by, the pom-poms and the streamers look like rainbows in the sky, look here they come, look here they come, look here they come, look here they come. Join the parade, bring your friends and family, tell everyone, join the parade, join the parade.
Rachel Sumner, the time is 3:26 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is Corey Pavitt from Pavitt Health and Fitness and also chiropractor in town. He's talking about a Thursday night workshop. Corey, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Oh, you're welcome, Jeff.
So this is all about kettlebells?
This Thursday's workshop is specifically about kettlebells.
What are kettlebells for people who do not know?
Yeah, which is probably a lot of people because they're a relatively new thing in the U.S., but kettlebells are an exercise equipment that basically looks like a big cannonball with a handle on it, and they come in various sizes. And they're the traditional way of strength training in Europe and especially in Russia. And in fact, I think they stayed popular in Russia through the last century, where in other parts of Europe perhaps they didn't, and certainly not in the U.S.
What makes them different or better than regular dumbbells?
They're more versatile. There's more things that you can do, and they're harder to hold on to. And of course, the more difficult and unbalanced something is, the more the body it's being stressed at one time, and the more real life it is.
What kind of tricks can you do with it?
Well, if you're an old time strongman, you can juggle with them. But I haven't gotten to that point yet. I wouldn't call it tricks, but they're excellent for shoulder rehabs, and that's one thing we'll be talking about on Thursday is how to rehab your shoulders and strengthen your shoulders. And there's some all over body exercises that you can do, and they're an amazing device for both developing strength and developing cardiovascular endurance at the same time.
What weights do they come in?
They're actually interesting. They come in originally they came in something called a pood, and a pood is 16 kilograms. So they come in a half a pood, a three quarters pood, but generally, they're anywhere from 8 pounds up to 106 pounds.
I keep thinking I get to say poodle.
No.
This is one poodle weight, two poodles.
Yeah, that's an archaic term, I think. Yeah.
What are some of the other things that you do there at Pavitt Health and Fitness?
I'm sorry?
What are some of the other things you do there at Pavitt Health and Fitness?
We do virtually everything. We've got just a whole slew of different activities, and we have classes for everything from yoga to body pump to dancing and cycling. We have a group cycling room now that state of the art, where in each cycler has an individual headset that listens to the instructor and the music. We've got a whole wide range of strength equipment, and we've got cardio equipment with television sets on there, and we've got a pool and a hot tub and a sauna. So really something for everybody. And what we pride ourselves on, and what we've talked about here before, are our Thursday night seminars that throughout the whole fall, winter, and spring, we do a seminar every Thursday and educate people on all aspects of nutrition and training.
And this is the one for the summer?
Yeah, during the summer we don't do it generally because everybody's busy during the summer and out fishing or whatever. But we've had a lot of interest in the kettlebells, so we decided we'd do a special seminar this Thursday at 6:30 p.m.
And you supply your own kettlebells?
No, we'll have the kettlebells for you.
Are they expensive as far as weights are concerned?
Well, they're not really, because you only need one or two of them. So it's actually, if someone wanted to train at home, it's a pretty good option. They're relatively heavy, expensive, because it's a heavy piece of heavy item, and they have to be shipped to Juneau. So it's in that regard. But I think they're probably an average of $80 to $120 for the size that you would need.
Are they covered with a rubber substance?
The lighter ones, for some reason, are. The women's are. The men's ones are not. And the traditionally, they're not.
How long is an average session?
It depends on how you're doing it. Some gyms who have kettlebell classes will run a 50 minute class on it, which is an incredible workout. My workouts with them range anywhere from 35 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes, depending on what day of the week.
So starting at 6:30 on Thursday evening at Pavitt Health and Fitness.
That's correct. And it's I want to remind everybody that all our seminars are free to anybody in the public. You don't have to be a member in order to come attend them.
All right, Corey, anything like that I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I just think if you're interested in a new way to exercise, or if you've seen kettlebells before and was curious as to what you could really do with them, or if you're interested in how they can help strengthen and protect your shoulders or your low back, then it could be a very interesting seminar.
What are some rules of thumb as far as weight training and exercise go?
Well, if we're talking about weight training, one of the biggest rules that anybody can apply to any exercise is to always control the weight, and that you need to lower the weight under control and lift the weight under control. And you've probably seen people in the gym heaving around weights, and that's a good way to get injured, and you don't develop your strength as quickly. So using full range of motion and controlling the weight, both lifting and lowering, is a really good rule for the strength training. With the in exercise in general, I think the most important thing, of course, is just do it and get started. But don't bite off more than you can chew, and progressively get more conditioned.
And Corey, thank you for coming by.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
This is Bird Note. Imagine seeing a young peregrine falcon take its maiden flight. Here's author Tony Angel to help you witness this rare sight.
A few years ago, I was standing opposite a peregrine falcon's cliffside nest, thinking optimistically of the bird's continued recovery, when the female falcon, carrying prey, flew into a stand of madronas and cedars overhead. She called across the bay that separated her from the nest on the cliff face. It was early in the day, and the single hungry youngster had yet to be fed. Seeing the meal she had in tow, the nestling responded with vigorous wing flapping and begging calls from the narrow ledge. In spite of its hunger, however, the young peregrine wasn't confident enough to fly out and cross the 300-foot expanse of water that separated it from the parent. There seemed to be a standoff until the adult began to pluck her catch. Puffs of dark feathers floated out from the bank of trees and lifted towards me. This was enough to launch the young bird, and with choppy wing beats, it gathered sufficient momentum to fly over to its mother and a meal. The begging cries continued and were interrupted only by the fledgling's choking swallows as it bolted down one mouthful after another. That morning, band-tail pigeon was on the menu.
For a link to Tony Angel's book, Puget Sound Through an Artist's Eye, come to our website, birdnote.org.
Time is 3:35, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest from the Marie Drake Planetarium is Ken Fix. Ken, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me again, Jeff.
So what's on the schedule for tomorrow night at 6:30?
Tomorrow night we will be beginning the retro sci-fi movie presentations that run the last Tuesday of the month for the summer. So we have three movie presentations that will be coming along. And I always like these because it's a very relaxed atmosphere. People can show up with their lawn chairs or blankets or whatever, and if you're nice about it, you can bring your own food and everything too, and it's a nice way to relax. And the movies are projected onto the planetarium dome, and the sound is run through the audio system in the planetarium, which we don't get a very big chance to use except when we do the movies.
And the film this week is?
It's going to be Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
Tell me about it, please.
It's a 1964 science fiction classic. You will recognize one of the people in the movie. There really isn't a whole lot of actors in this one. There's basically three guys and a monkey. That's pretty much all you see. Paul Mantee plays the lead role in there. Adam West has a minor role in it, and the other character is played by Victor London, who all three of those are still very active in the acting community today.
What's the plot other than just Robinson Crusoe landing on Mars?
It's basically a story of a Mars survey mission, and they go out of orbit due to an approaching asteroid, and they wind up ejecting from the spacecraft and coming down in two separate capsules, and they try to link up in the very beginning of the movie and are unsuccessful in, you know, doing a whole lot of that. But they realize that the Mars recon mission, the orbiter is still in orbit around Mars, and it's fully loaded with all kinds of supplies. So it's basically a supermarket floating in the sky, but there's no way to bring it down because it's out of fuel. So it's locked into an orbit around Mars, and they basically can't get to it. But it's how they learn to survive on Mars. Basically, one character makes it and the other one doesn't. But how do you survive when you're running out of oxygen and you have to rely on what you've got available to you? And it's just, you know, a story of how this guy basically uses what scientific tools that he's got in order to survive on a strange, hostile planet, which, amazingly, was... the physical appearance of it is very accurate as far as how the surface of Mars goes, but they also had depictions of some volcanic activity, which we know right now doesn't have anything like that going on. But in 1964, we had not landed a spacecraft on Mars yet, so we really didn't know what the conditions were like. Well, also, you would freeze to death very quickly because, besides the extreme lack of any breathable atmosphere, mostly the temperature is... on a balmy day at the equator, is probably about minus 20.
What helps qualify this as a classic? Is it the acting, the storyline, the plot?
It would be a lot of the storyline, the characters that are in it. It's based on a science fiction novel by Daniel Defoe. And the director, Brian Haskin, may not sound familiar to anybody out there, but for people that have seen some of the other movies that he's done, notably the 1953 version of War of the Worlds with Gene Barry and Anne Robinson, most people know that one. But this is a lesser-known movie that he directed. He's also directed a lot of things for television, too, and he's gone now, but he left quite a legacy of film behind. And this DVD that I'm running... was never really released until 2007. This movie was never out on a DVD prior to this. So it's kind of nice that they went back and pulled the original 35mm negative and cleaned it up and restored it, and also basically retooled the whole audio track too. So it really looks terrific.
Is there a Friday character in this movie?
Yes. He's actually an alien who winds up on Mars digging ore for another alien race, but he's actually a slave. So that is the sort of the Friday character, and that's, I guess, the reference back to the original Robinson Crusoe story.
It's relating to the monkey then?
The monkey is kind of a sidekick. Basically serves a few functions in the film besides comic relief. And what's funny is the monkey is supposed to be female in the movie, but it was actually played by a monkey named Barney back in 1964, and it was a male monkey. So it was a male monkey playing a female, but you really can't notice the difference. It's the same kind of monkey. But it's a pretty terrific little film, and we are going to be running about a 13-minute presentation on the Venus transit prior to the film because we sort of got clouded out here in Juneau. We didn't get rained out. We just got clouded out. The Venus Transit, we were all set up at Marine Park on the 5th of June with a 12-inch reflector telescope set up there, and we were right there for the start of it, and I got to see the very beginning of it, but after about the first 45 minutes into the transit, we got clouded over completely, and we weren't able to catch the rest of it. Did get the rest of it on the NASA channel, and that's what we'll be seeing is a little presentation on why the transit was so important, and also some of the spectacular images that came in from various sources during the course of the transit.
This all starts tomorrow about 6:30 at the Marie Drake
Planetarium. 6:30 at the Marie Drake Planetarium, and we are on Glacier Highway downtown between Harborview and the Juno Douglas High School.
And when do you start up again in the fall?
The fall presentations will begin again in September. The summer movie schedule runs June, July, and August. And so far, Robinson Crusoe on Mars would be our first one this summer, followed by, and this is not carved in stone, but pretty sure these are what we're going to run, War of the Worlds in July, the original from 1953, and then we're going to run When Worlds Collide in August.
Sounds like a great season.
It will be. It'll be pretty terrific. Popcorn will be for sale at the planetarium for the free show tomorrow, so come on by. Again, it's a really relaxed atmosphere. If you don't like our padded chairs, bring your own lawn chair, bring a blanket, whatever, and enjoy a free movie. Tomorrow is probably going to be as ugly as it is today for rain, so if you're looking for something to do indoors that's fit for an entire family, please come by the planetarium and enjoy the free movie.
It's tomorrow night at 6:30?
Yes.
I can't fix anything like that. I might have forgotten to ask.
No, I think I covered most everything. I don't know who's going to do the lead off in September, but we'll start our regular programming once we get into the September schedule.
All right, Robinson Crusoe and Mars starting tomorrow night about 6:30 after the presentation about the Dream Venus Transit. Can't thank you for coming down the station today.
Thanks again, Jeff.
His good man Friday was his only friend. They didn't borrow a lend. They built a little hut, lived there till Friday, but Saturday night it was shut. And where did Robinson Crusoe go with Friday on Saturday night? Every Saturday night they were starting to roam. On Sunday morning they come staggering home. On this island live wild men, cannibal trimmings, and where there are wild men, there must be wild women. So where did Robinson Crusoe go on Friday or Saturday night? Take it easy, will you, Fletcher?
Music from Ian Whitcomb from an old scratchy LP. Juno's 4th of July parade entry forms are due today. It's June 25th. Entry forms are available at Mendenhall Valley Library in the Valley and at Cycle Alaska here in town. All instructions are on the entry form. Again, that deadline is today. If you need more information on that, give them a call at 790-4444. Southeast Alaska State Fair is coming up in Haines, July 26th through the 29th, featuring a whole schedule got performers, including Kaya Hartwood. Takes on.
you over pretty good for a while.
Hurtwood. Before that, we heard from Larry and his Flask. Both performers are going to be appearing at the Southeast Alaska State Fair in Beautiful Haines, July 26th through the 29th. If you need more information about that, check out their website. Time is 3:47. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. Here's a little bit more from the Mudworks series recorded last March. This is Pete Griffin.
Our next speaker is Pete Griffin. Pete Griffin is a Youper, a native of Michigan's Upper Peninsula, and he makes an annual pilgrimage to his cabin there. He retired in 2010 after a 36-year career with the U.S. Forest Service. Retirement has given him time to develop and tell stories of his experiences in the forest, as well as stories about growing up. In the summer of 2011, he told natural history stories on board the Disney Wonder as it sailed the Inside Passage. He recently told his stories in concert in Los Angeles at the National Storytelling Network conference. Pete is currently the Alaska State Liaison for that organization. Pete Griffin.
Oh, man. Well, where I grew up in Upper Michigan, having a cabin was a status symbol. And unless you happen to be a family that lived in one of those one-room cabins out in the woods. But I grew up, moved away from home, and every once in a while I'd come back and visit. And I told my dad once, gosh, I got this property. I think I'm going to build a cabin. And he said, well, I got a cabin for you. He said, used it for storage. I don't need it anymore. 14 by 16, that's perfect. But he said, I got to tell you, it belonged to old Bill Murphy. Well, old Bill Murphy was a character around town as I grew up. He was a constant. He was a kind of a weird guy living in this cabin without any running water or electricity. He'd wander around town. He kept a big wad of cash in his wallet or his pocket. When he'd buy something, he'd peel past the 50s and the 20s and the 10s and pull out a couple of dollar bills to pay for his flour or his fuel oil for his stove. Well, old Bill was found dead in a snowbank one Saturday morning. He had been beaten and robbed. He didn't have a family, and his stuff was sold at an estate sale. Dad bought the cabin, moved it up to his farm, and I said, sure, I'll take the cabin. So I moved it over to my property, and the cabin was really in tough shape. It really stunk. I mean, the interior was covered with kind of a greasy soot, and old Bill Murphy had collected raw deer hides for some reason, stored them up in the rafters. Well, man, a hair all over. We got rid of the deer hides, but I was going to work on this cabin on weekends. So I pulled up the first weekend on a Friday night and put up my tent, because I wasn't sleeping in that cabin until it was thoroughly disinfected. And I went off, I visited the neighbors and let them know there was going to be activity around the cabin, and they complained about the deer in their garden and the bear that was getting into their outbuildings and garbage. And then I went and checked in with my parents and found my friends, and about midnight, I headed back to the cabin to get a good night's sleep and start on working on the cabin the next day. Well, one of those Midwest thunderstorms brewed up. Big billowing thunderheads, and it started hailing and raining and the wind, and the rain was coming down in buckets. It was raining cats and dogs. It was raining like a cow pissing on a flat rock. And I was weaving down this gravel road, and the trees overarching the road were waving back and forth, and there were limbs coming down, and I was steering the truck around, and I pulled into the two-track road that led to the cabin, and there in the headlights, I could just barely make out the cabin, and there was no tent. And I got out, and I looked, and a limb had fallen on the tent and squashed it and was laying in a puddle of water. And I took my sleeping bag and I threw it in the cabin because, man, I wasn't going to spend the night in the tent. So I'm laying there, and this storm is moving in, and I can see the lightning flashes, and I'm counting the seconds and hear the rumble of the storm. That was only a mile away, and that lightning strike was only a half a mile away. And then it was only a quarter mile away, and it would light up the interior of the cabin like a flash bulb. Just bam! An intense light, as intense as that light right there. I couldn't see anything. Could see no color, and then the light would go away, and I'd be in a complete dark except for this image that was just burned into my retinas. And then the thunder, a flash of light, and a crack, and a bam, and the cabin would shake. And the deer hair would come down like snow. Oh, flash, bam, and the deer hair coming down, and I'm laying there thinking, man, what if there's a lightning flash and old Bill Murphy is standing there looking down at me? I'm going to have to get out of there. Well, the cabin door opened inward, so I had to open the door because I didn't want to let anything get between me and escape. So I opened the door, and the rain and the wind kind of swirled in, and I'm laying there, and the lightning, and a bam, and deer hair falling like the snow. And I'm laying there, and I'm thinking, what about that bear? Been breaking into the neighbor's outbuildings. If the bear comes by, man, this is a nice dry cabin, and he can smell that deer hair, why wouldn't he come in? Well, I'd have to shut the door, but I can't shut the door. If old Bill Murphy shows up, I got to get out of there. So I needed a plan. So I rounded up all the cans in the cabin, all the empty cans. And in the interest of full disclosure, the cans had been filled with an adult beverage at one time. So I stacked them up in the doorway of the cabin, and I thought, if old Bill Murphy shows up, those cans won't stop me getting out. But if the bear comes around, he'll knock over the cans, I'll wake up, I'll kick the door shut, I'll be all set. And that's the way I spent the night. Now, the next morning I get up, and it was a nice bright day, and gosh, I went over to my parents' place, had breakfast, and I told them about the ghost of old Bill Murphy. And, of course, they had a good chuckle at that. And I said, yeah, but I said, I blame you. And they said, what? Why? I said, well, look, your son is 30 years old. He's still afraid of ghosts. I think that was a result of the way I was raised. Now, my dad passed away a few years ago. I followed my mother, and I was back at the cabin, and standing there, and it's a lot different now. The interior of the cabin is paneled with cedar, and there are bunk beds for the kids along one wall, and a wood stove over in the other corner, and the trim around the door, there are lines and names and dates. When we visited with the kids, we'd stand them up against the door, and we'd draw a little pencil mark at the top of their head, and we kept track of that over the years. And I realized that there's a lot of different ways that we measure growing up. One of them is lines on the door to see how high you are. Another way is dates on a calendar. And then I thought, you know, there's another way, and that is how quickly we can outgrow our fear of things that aren't real. But then I realized that I still have that ability to imagine things that aren't there. And that was a result of my upbringing. And I wish I'd had the time to thank my parents for that. Thank you.
Storyteller Pete Griffin recorded last March as part of the Mudroom series of storytelling events. You are tuned to KTUO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. The Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Chris Davis listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sarasuna at 91.9. Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait here at KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. Also online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow at 3 o'clock on KTOO News and on Juneau Afternoon Panmore will be your host. Chris Taylor from Canvas will be here to highlight July art classes, and we'll find out about summer sailing opportunities with the people from seas. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Known Music, and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, more rain with low temperatures around 50 degrees, southwest, southeast winds to 10 to 20 miles per hour. Forecast for Tuesday, more rain with high temperatures around 54 degrees. Tuesday night, rain, low temperatures around 47 degrees. Rain likely on Wednesday, and Thursday through Saturday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain. Next is All Things Considered, behind us the music of Seamus Egan, one of the guest artists of the past Alaska Folk Festival a few years ago.